Welcome to the Department of Agricultural Economics podcast. This is your host, Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster, the head of the department. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing well, Jessica. We had some excitement in the building earlier today. We had a fire alarm. I think it's the first fire alarm in many, many years. Certainly the first fire alarm we've had in the Craner building since we got the talking alarms.
I was about to say, I have never in my life heard a talking alarm before.
I had no
Please
idea.
Please exit the building.
I had Please. No idea that our alarms talked to us until today when it started talking.
It's just to improve clarity, you know. It's all about communications, which is what we're doing right now.
There was no uncertainty. I mean, it came on and told us there's a fire emergency in the building. Fortunately, there was no real fire, but the Purdue Fire Department in excellent fashion came, checked things out, and told us all was clear.
I have to say, there are some members of our faculty who I've never seen move that fast, ever.
You know, self-preservation is a mighty force.
It is indeed.
And they were going down the stairs, so you
oh, that's
makes
right.
you fast.
Maybe it was a fitness plan. Maybe it was, you know, down the stairs and back up the stairs, everybody one time to see, you know.
This is a part you're going to edit out.
No. By the way, so if you're wondering what this mysterious
voice is
with this Latino accent here in the background, that is our guest today, Dr. Nelson Villoria, who is a professor here in the Department of Agricultural Economics, who does some really interesting research on, I have this paragraph in front of me that says, using economic geography models of international trade that emphasize the role of technology and geography in determining bilateral patterns of trade and production. Okay, all right, sorry to have bored you with that. Why don't you tell us, Nelson, in words I can understand. What is it? What do you do? What's your area of research?
Sure. What interests me is how supply responds across different locations, different geographies. So when you, for example, some bad supply of, say, corn in the U.S., how is that affecting international prices and how is that going to affect the supply response? I look at international trade, how shipment of stuff across countries changes and what that implies for prices and welfare at the end of the day.
So we're going to talk about land use today. That's what we're going to talk about.
Right.
And I'm going to ask another super basic question again to get us started. When you say land use, what do you mean exactly?
I guess that the best way of look at it, it's the conversion of natural lands, forest and grassland, to agriculture. Think about deforestation, for example. Think about going out and saying, well, this parcel has a natural use, we're going to incorporate it to the cropland. So that's what we mean by land use. The way I look at it, it's a global land use. But it's also something that we are starting to look at. It's a people making more efficient use of the land. So instead of having one crop every year, having two or three. So indeed, we are seeing now that many countries, even those that are considered land abundant, what they are doing is intensifying the use of the land. So in Brazil, for example, is one case in which double cropping or triple cropping, it's explaining most of the growth in area harvested now, rather than going out to the Amazon and cutting it down. So, extended answer to what I mean by land use.
When you think about technological change in agriculture in North America that leads to greater output per acre, is that saving rainforests in Brazil?
Yeah.
Sort of linkages?
That's exactly the question that I'm looking at now. And that question, it's technological change is indeed land saving, and that's what we observe in the statistics. Globally, the extent did save land, even though we had episodes of deforestation in Central America, South America, the U.S., and so forth.
And when we say these sorts of things, save land, we're really talking about in a relative sense to other inputs? Are we talking about relative to what things would have been if we had not had this technological change? Or are we talking about relative to what things were in the past? Because there's a lot of different ways that I could think of using that term, land saving.
So the way we measure it, it's kind of establishing a response of countries to prices, and then trying to see the deviations from that average response and how that deviation correlates with technological change. So when you correct by country size, the larger a country, the larger the chances that the country expands. You see that, yes, indeed, countries that have had technological improvement tend to deforest less.
What are some of your biggest concerns about global land use in the future? What do you predict are going to be the big concerns that we face?
You know, these questions have been asked many times. There have been famous episodes of people betting that, you know, we run out of resources and humankind is in real peril, and others that say, well, you know what, we'll figure it out. And so far, we have figured it out. Very large costs in terms of environmental quality. You know, countries move through that ladder of environmental quality. People are saying that we are running out of resources. And again, others say we are smart enough to change things. So people is starting to look at sustainable intensification and improving technologies to keep feeding the world without running out of resources. I think in terms of predicting, we'll keep eating. That's a basic need. You know, we can expect better technologies to come on. One of the things that people is looking at are the so-called yield gaps. That is
the yield gaps.
So what's the gap between high yield regions like Indiana and, you know, other countries to that measure?
So Indiana has a high yield of corn. We produce a ton of corn.
Exactly.
And you compare it to
several,
a place.
Several tons.
What's an example?
Venezuela. There is a case that I know. If you are getting 2.5 tons per hectare. That's a good yield. That's a respectable amount of corn to get out of your land. Here, I think it's between 10 and 12, the average. So that's the gap.
So nearly triple.
Yeah. Now, that's a purely biophysical concept. In reality, both farmers are making money and doing what they should be doing. But there is the idea that we still could improve technology so that you close those yield gaps. It's a bit of a controversial idea. It's not clear how to do it. It's probably easier to do in the poorest regions of the world, where, you know, you don't have commercial agriculture and you don't have improved seeds and all those things.
You use the term sustainable intensification. Can you give us an example of what you mean when you use that term?
I'm wrapping my mind around that concept, to be honest. But it's this idea that you are able to get more land-friendly practices than just applying fertilizer.
Is that consistent with this idea of closing this yield gap, especially if some of that yield gap is closed by using more fertilizer, more energy?
Yeah, you know, at a first...
generating more emissions?
Yeah, quite a bit of a contradiction between environmentally friendly way and attaining the levels of yields that we have.
How much of this is going to require us to be more open-minded with respect to things like genetically modified organisms? I mean, let me just paint you a picture. How about the corn plant? How about the cactus plant that bears corn and has roots like a legume that fixes nitrogen? Wouldn't that be a wonderfully sustainable intensification strategy? I mean,
that was creative.
Water.
Scary as hell, but sustainable.
It generates its own fertilizer. It's heat tolerant. It's water drought tolerant, and it produces the product that we know and love to consume.
Definitely, I think that you know, at the very core of many of these issues, there is a conflict between the preferences and priorities of important groups. Many consumers are better off, like organic, local, and so forth, but that tends to be more expensive than things that are traditional commercial and cold.
Sure, sure. Just to be clear, I think I just defined frankenfruit.
I was like, really? This is curious.
And perhaps even the biggest piece of that puzzle is a change in diets. In countries that are getting richer and eating more meat. So some people say, well, they should not change their diets. They should be eat more vegetables. So you're imposing a set of preferences and choices on large masses of the planet that want to enjoy the right to eat other foods or better foods.
Some of this comes back around to this whole idea of land saving technology. And when I think of that term land saving, it's in a relative sense, land relative to other inputs. And if we're saving land in a technological change, that usually means that we're intensifying the use of some other input. I mean, is that the case in this circumstance? If we're saving land, does that mean we're intensifying the use of labor or capital or chemical inputs?
It turns out that as countries are more integrated in the world economy, this land-saving effect of technological progress, it's less and less until it vanishes. And ultimately, very well-connected countries to the world economy, what I'm finding is that technological progress tend to be land expansive. There is more deforestation. And the reason really is that you have a larger market and better returns for your product. But what is interesting about that is that being better integrated in the world economy, it's generally a good thing in the sense that it allows you to have cheaper prices for many of the things you consume, sell your stuff at a better price, and consume a larger set of goods that you would otherwise. But you have this kind of paradoxical effect there that comes into the picture too. People that sometimes are talking about things like sustainable intensification worry about remote drivers of land use. And remote drivers of land use, for example, for a coffee grower in the Dominican Republic, it's an American consumer that wants organic coffee. So it's a tough call whether you should sever that link or encourage it, right? Even though with the latter, you may be encouraging using more forest.
Well, I want to thank you, Nelson, for joining us. We've talked about a lot of big, tough problems that we'll be facing that require a lot of give and take and understanding of outcomes.
That's what it's all about, right? The global sustainability of food security.
Exactly. Well, again, this is Purdue University's Department of Agricultural Economics podcast with Dr. Ken Foster and Jess Guise, and we want to thank you for listening, and feel free to follow us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.